Accession number 114407.
Mr. Walter Hare, Reel 7. We were talking about your time with the battalion in the Gavrel area.
Yes.
On Vimy Ridge. I wonder, the note of that we talked about earlier, of a German rifle that you found on Vimy Ridge with sparks.
Yes, well, we were in support. The Canadians were getting ready for attacking Lens, and we were in support of them. We were in the trenches for rather a long time. And the Sergeant Major Cousins, he was very keen on rifle fire and on shooting, and he arranged in an old communication trench a sort of firing range. And we used to put shell cases up, and we had a sweep, and a penny a piece or something like that, and whoever got the most shell cases down with them, 10 rounds, got the sweep. Now, I always looked after my rifle. I had a very good rifle, and I was a fair good shot, and I was winning quite often. And then, being a runner, one day I had a scrounge round to see if there's any fresh place I hadn't been to, and I came across a dugout. We hadn't had that part of the line long, but this dugout, and I went down it. It was an old German dugout. And I saw there was a rifle, a nice rifle, standing at the bottom of the dugout steps. I thought, oh, there must be some Germans left here. I went very quietly down, had a look, and I went along. There were two openings to the dugout, and I went along. There was no Germans there, but there was some bandoliers of ammunition. And this rifle was in beautiful condition, so I thought I took it back with me, and some ammunition as well. And the next day when we had the shoot, the German rifle had an O back sight. And ours had a U, and you had to get the tip of the foresight in line with the centre of the shoulders of the U on the backside. But the Germans, all you had to do was get the tip of the foresight in the centre of the ring. It was quite simple. So I got the first 10 down without any trouble. And within another 10, I got all 10 down again. And the sergeant made a system made by your rifle's in good condition today. Can I have a shoot with it? I said, yes, if you want to. And I handed it to him. He said, this is a German rifle. I said, yes. He said, well, that isn't fair. I said, well, you didn't say we couldn't use a German rifle. He said, where do you get this from? So I told him. He said, what are you going to do with it? I said, oh, I don't know. He said, well, you can't carry two rifles around France with you, can you? I said, no, I can't. Oh, You think you'll be ready for leave soon, do you? I said, yes. Did you think you'd be able to take it home with you? I said, well, I did think so. He seemed to have nothing else chance. He said, you'd get your leave stopped when you got back to when you get on the boat. And he said, you'd be sent back. And he said, if you waited all this time, it wouldn't be worth it, would it? I said, no, sir. And he said, but if we move from here, he said, you can't take it with you. I said, no. Well, the following day, the adjutant came to see me. He said, the Sergeant Major tells me you've got a German rifle. I said, yes, sir. He said, can I have a look at it? I said, yes. Oh, he says, in very good condition, isn't it? He said, yeah, where's some ammunition as well? I said, yes, I do. He said, what are you going to do with it? I said, well, I don't know. He said, Sergeant Major tells me that you're about ready for due for leave. He said, and he thinks you thought you might be able to get it back to England. I said, well, I had thought about it. He said, you haven't a chance, you know. He said, you couldn't. He said, they would stop you. Would you sell it to me? I said, yes, sir. He says, well, I'm going on leave soon. And he said, office valises aren't checked. He said, nothing can get the armour sergeant to take it to pieces and get it in my lease for me. I said, very good, sir. And he gave me 5 francs for it. And he went. I think they had 10 days leave. But we were still in the same place when he came back from his leave. He lived in Bradford. I think they called him Atkinson, but I'm not sure. And he said, he was the adjutant, actually. He said, when he came back from leave, he came to see me. He said, I got my rifle home. I said, did you? He says, yes, that's a lovely souvenir for me after the war. And he told me a bit about things, what things were like in Bradford, and what it was like at home, you see. He said, I don't know if I'm going to be staying here, but he said, thank you very much. He said, that'd be a lovely souvenir. I bought a few cigarettes. He bought me 200 gold flake cigarettes back. Well, I didn't smoke. But however, I had plenty of friends who did, you see. So he said, well, thank you very much. And he stopped talking a bit, you see, about things. And then he set off down the road. Now, they were building the headquarters were in a dugout, well, in a cellar in Vimy Village itself. It was about a mile down the road. And he went. And about a quarter of an hour later, they brought him back on a stretcher. It was his leg shattered. He caught a shell also. They started shelling the road, which often did. And he'd been on it when they shelled it. Now, what happened to him eventually, I just don't know. But I thought, I was telling them, I was telling them about this when we were on Vimy Ridge, and I said, you see, that's war. If he hadn't been that kind of an officer, if he'd never bothered, he came back to talk to me, to tell me he'd got his rifle home. He stopped and talked to me. Now, if he'd gone straight back, he wouldn't have got his wound, you see. But with doing that, being kind and considerate, he's lost a leg. And I'll bet, he'll be dead now, of course, but I bet every time he looked at that rifle, I bet he wished he'd never seen it.
Another story from the time you were at Vimy, you know, Gavrel area. There's a story about a beer barrel fatigue.
Oh, yes. Well, the canteen was allowed to come up, and they used to sell beer in the canteen as well. And
where would it come up to?
Actually, their canteen was in a cellar in Vimy Village itself, and they were getting they got the corporal in charge of the canteen and got permission to have were staying so long to get a cask of beer, a barrel of beer up, and the limber could only come. We could only do it in daylight. The limber could only come to the top of the ridge. It wasn't allowed to come over. So they're going to take the barrel of beer off there. And then it had to be rolled down the road. So me, being a non-drinker, was the first one to be detailed to help to get this barrel of beer down, you see. There were three of us, I think. There were three of us. And so we got this barrel of beer off the limber and got it rolling down the road. And I said, I'll be in front of it to stop it from rolling too far. And one of you at either side. And we got this thing. And you know the barrel of beer is like, and it rolled about like that. Well, we got it so far down, and Jerry must have spotted us because it dropped a shell at the bottom of the road. And the next one a bit nearer, that's how they did. They brought it, you see. I thought, the next one's coming through now. If that shell is coming, if I get coming, I'm leaving this barrel of beer. And they said, you can't do that. I said, I'm leaving. And this shell came near, and I let go. And these two chaps couldn't hold it one either, and it set off down the road on its own. It wobbled about like that, this barrel of beer, and went into a field and must have hit something because it burst. And the next thing I remember was seeing these two lads off down this road, and they were laid in the grass drinking this beer up. Well, I got into trouble for that because it was my fault that they hadn't got the beer.
With being, you know, in this area, I mean, you talked a lot about shell fire and things yes. like that. Did it begin to get on your nerves at all?
No, you accepted it. There was one thing that happened there at Gavrel. We were getting ready for coming out and they started shelling us a bit. And I popped my rifle up at the side of the trench. And I think they call him Croxford, the captain of our company, something like that. And as he was coming along, there was a shrapnel shell burst just ahead of us. And a piece of shrapnel smashed into my rifle and smashed it up. We both got down, you see, so it didn't hurt us. My rifle was broken. And he looks at it, he says, well, that's no good. I said, no, sir. He said, well, just throw it over the top. He says, and I'll see that you get one when we get out. So when we paraded the next morning, which also had an inspection the following morning. I was there like a stupid ass with no rifle. And it was a chap called Greenwood, the officer. He'd been left out. He hadn't been in with us that time. And he said to me, where's your rifle? I said, oh, it's broken, sir. He says, well, my sister brought it out. a soldier never leaves his rifle if it's in 1,000 pieces. I said, no, sir, but it was no use. I said, it was broken. I said, the piece of shell hit it and smacked it up. I said, Captain Coxford told me to throw it over the top, and he'd see it. I got another one, I got out. He said, it's all right, tell us a tale like that. You know that Captain Coxford got wounded as he came out. I said, I didn't know. He said, he'll be in hospital now. He said, oh. He said, you knew that, so you were telling us that tale. I said, no, I didn't. So he said, well, right. Hardly though, 10 o'clock. They put me £7.10 in my pay book for a new rifle, for a rifle. Well, being a gunner, I knew where there were plenty of rifles at one sort and another later back. In fact, I knew where mine was, you see, and I thought, well, now then, I'll nip up to the trenches tonight and get a rifle of some sort, and you see, that'll save me. There was a working party going up that night. We're digging a new communication on top of the ridge down towards Gavrell. And there was a working party going up, and I found out that Lieutenant Greenwood was in charge of them, because he'd been left out that time, so he was in charge of the party. So I decided that I would join that party when they set off. There'd be about 20 of them going on this party. And then nip off and find a rifle and come back. So as the party was lined up, ready for off, it'd be about 10 o'clock at night when they set off, I went to the quarter, the dump, and picked a rifle, a spade up, a shovel, and fell in behind them, you see, after they'd been counted and checked up. So we got down to the communication, and I started doing a bit of digging, and then I noticed that Lieutenant Greenwood's batman was near to me, and he was doing a bit of digging as well. And he laid his rifle down on the top of the trench, so I thought, well, there's no need for me to go looking for a rifle, there's one here. So when his back was turned, I picked his rifle up, dropped my shovel, and set off back home. Following morning, of course, we went on parade. I reported that I'd found a rifle, so it was all right. Now, you're supposed to know the number of your rifle, but none of us did, because your rifle was... And I've often wondered what Lieutenant Greenwood said to his batman when he found he'd lost his rifle. The funny thing is about it, they keep, he and his brother, I found out, kept a jeweller's shop at Ball Lane in Leeds. So one day I was in with my wife, we're doing a bit of shopping. I said, oh, I want to go in there. She said, what, jeweller's shop? I said, yes. She said, what do you want to go in there for? I said, I want to have a word with Mr. Greenwood. I want to tell him it was me that pinched his back. She said, you're not going in. Let it drop. I said, no, I'd like to. She said, no, you're not. She wouldn't let me go. I've often been sorry that I wasn't able to go and tell him it was me that got his rifle. I've often wondered what that lad did when he got to report he'd lost his rifle.
Now, you said your company commander was...
He was wounded.
Was Coxford?
Yes, I think it was Coxford.
That was headquarter company, was it? Or were you with another company?
I was with still headquarters, but I was waiting to come. We were waiting to come out. I still belonged to a certain company, you see. I was attached to headquarters.
Was that still C Company?
I still C Company, yes. Yeah.
Sorry, it was just because it makes it clear.
Yes.
Anything else? With the shells, did you get used to judging where they?
Yeah. You had a pretty rough idea. You could pretty well tell where they were going to come. Yes.
And could you tell which type they were?
Well, you knew, yes, there was sort of a wine with a shrapnel shell, but there wasn't with a heavy. But we didn't get a lot of heavy. We usually used shrapnel on those, on the front line trenches.
Now, from there, you said you went along to Arlow.
Yes.
Which is further to the left, you said.
Further to the left, yes.
On the ridge.
Yes,
Still on Bibby Ridge,
yes. We took over, and the headquarters there were on the road behind the village. There was a lot of trees up there, poplar trees, I think, there were on the roadside. And we were holding trenches in front of the village, but the headquarters staff and the runners that were just behind. The first day we were in, I was ordered by the colonel sent for me. He wanted the message taken to the... whoever was on our left to find out who was in which battalion or which he would maybe know, but I had to find the colonel in charge of the battalion on the left and take this message to him. And of course I was moving down a communication, the support line was manned like the front line was. course, but it was manned more thinly. There weren't so many of you. But I walked along, I was going along this rear trench, and I went round one bay after another, and then I came to three or four places. There was nobody at all. One said, I thought, this is queer. I wonder if our trenches on the left are still occupied by the Germans, because it was new to us, we just moved in, you see. I thought, well, this is queer. So I fixed my bayonet. I thought there might be a German round the corner. And I went a bit further, still nobody on Sentry Go. And I saw a chap laid on the parapet with his feet up in the air. He was one of our police, battalion police as well.
Your battalion?
Our battalion, yes. With his feet up in the air. When he saw me, he jumped down. I says, what's going on? He says, I wanted to blight you. I can't stand any more of this. He says, I can't bear any more. I says, well, we all feel like that. He says, oh, no, you don't. I said, look, we all feel exactly like that. He said, I can't give myself a self-imposed wound because you know what that means, court-martial. He said, and I thought, there's a few bit of rifle firing. I thought I might get a bullet through one of my legs or something like that. I said, look here, old lad. I said, how do you think I feel? I said, I fixed my bayonet. I thought there might be a German round this corner. But I said, I've got to take a message to that company, that battalion that I left. I'm going to take it. That's my job. Now, I said, you old lad, get back to your unit and forget all about this. I said, and remember that every one of us feel exactly like you do. But we're here to do a job and we're going to do it. So I said, just remember, I said, don't mention this to a soul, and I won't. I'll never tell them your name. I'll never mention your name. We'll forget it. But just remember, we're all like you. And I still remember that chap's name, and I've never told anybody it. I never will.
What was were there many people who tried self-inflicted wounds or putting that deliberate...
You did occasionally, yes. You all got to that stage when you thought you couldn't bear any more. This continual shelling and bombing thing got on your nerves eventually. But about the rum jar.
Hang on a minute, I'll come back. Just sticking with this. So you managed to control that in yourself, though?
Yes.
What about, did you ever see anyone with a self-inflicted wound, or did you just hear about them?
Well, I heard about. I never saw anybody inflict them. I heard about them. Yes.
What about shell shock? Did you ever see any people?
Yes, I've seen chaps with shell shock.
And what symptoms did they show?
They just went batty. They didn't know what they were doing.
Did you think it was that they were cowards, or did you believe that?
No, at first I thought they were cowards. Then I realised that the strain had got some of them down.
And so you thought shell shock was a real thing?
It was a real thing. It was a real thing to some of them. I was one of the lucky ones. It never really affected me a lot. It never got me down.
Right, sorry, you were about the rum jar then?
Yes. Well, the Sergeant Major had in charge of the rum, of course. And the rations were coming up. Like railway down there with the Germans used. And we were using that for ration to come up. And the giant maid says to me, oh, there's rum coming up tonight. I didn't usually go on the ration party, but there's rum. He always let me go because he knew some of the chaps had had the cork out and they'd been out of themselves. It was in stone jars. He said, there's two jars of rum, so he said, take some sandbags and you collect it for us. So I went. And we collected our rations, the ration party, and I collected the rum. And we were walking down these lines when the Germans started to shell us. And I flopped down, as you did when they started shelling, and one of these rum jars caught on one of these rails and spilled rum all over me. I saved some of it, but however, most of it disappeared. And when I got back, I told, I said to the sergeant major, I'm sorry, but he said, well, I can tell what's happened. You smell of rum. I said, yes, sir. He said, I couldn't help it. He said, well, fortunately, we have a drop in hand. He said, they won't have to go without the rum ration tonight. So I said, we'll be able to do that. But whenever I went down the trenches after that, they used to say, here comes our bloody rum ration. They could smell me, you see. I was aged before I got the smell of that rum off my clothes. But we got through it all right. They didn't shoot me, but...
What about... you did some revolver practice, that sounds...
Oh, yes.
What was all that about?
Well, the Sergeant Major was very keen on shooting of any sort.
This is the same Sergeant
Major? The same Sergeant Major.
The range?
Yeah, he was very keen. And he had a revolver, because he didn't have a rifle, you know, like with the officer, they had revolvers. And he got some targets on some of these... he used to say the officer couldn't shoot, and no idea. He got some targets on some of these trees, and he had them walking down and shooting as they went past to get to see any use. And Sergeant Major went with them as well.
So he was giving revolver practice to the officers?
Revolver practice to the officers, yes. And they'd been on this practice one day. We did it in daylight, of course, because we were well behind the village, and there was all these trees about who were fairly well protected. And this particular day, when he'd been, he said to me as usual, he said, "Will you clean my revolver for me?" I says, "Yes, sir." So I'd done it before, and. I cleaned it, and I looked down the barrel to see that it was clean inside, and then they had sort of a pull through a rod to clean it with, and then I thought, I'll just revolve it and see that it's all right. But then I took my thought, no, I'll have a look first. I opened it, and there was one round left in it, in the chamber. Well, they daily shock. That was the biggest shock I ever had. I must have gone as white as a ghost because I nearly shot myself.
Can you just explain why? Because for people who don't understand guns so well.
Well, if I'd have pulled that trigger, it would have revolved round, and I'd have shot. It was a chamber with about six bullets in. You see, and as he had fired, it went round once like that, and this bullet would have been next in the chamber, and then I'd fired it. I would have fired it at myself. And when the Sergeant Major came in with a little steel shelter at the side of the road there, dug into the bank at the side of the road, he says, "What's the matter?" I said, I told him. He said, "Don't ever tell us all." He said, I shouldn't have done that. He said, "That's the first thing we tell you. Empty your rifle before you clean. Empty your revolver before you start to clean it. Don't bring this to us all. It's hard to get into trouble," which I never did. But do you know, that upsets me more than all the shell fire in a machine gun, to think that I was so near to death and it had been my own fault.
What was he like, the RSM?
He was good.
What was his name again?
Cousins.
What type of a man was he? Give us a picture of him.
He'd been an ex-policeman. And... we seemed to be getting very well together. I was with him a lot of the time. And if he wanted any special doing, he used to ask me to do it for him and that sort of thing, you see. I don't know why, but we got on very well with him. I can tell you more about it when we get to tell about being taken prisoner.
I should have asked you earlier, when exactly did you go to Arlo or move along, roughly speaking?
Well, we'd been out on rest, and we went out into a different sector. That was what happened. And we went into Arlo instead of Gavrelle sector.
When was that, roughly speaking?
Oh, it'd be about sometime in August, I would think.
You must have had... You've mentioned a couple of times leave. You went on... Was this your first leave you went on?
Yeah.
From Vimy Ridge?
From Vimy Ridge, yes.
What do you remember about your leave, then?
Well, I was notified that my leave was due. The adjutant came to me. And said, your leave's due. Report to the quartermaster's boat at Mont Saint Eloy. He'll give you the pass. So I said, "Yes, sir." "No, you have to get out as best you can." No, I didn't mess about because they were shelling us a bit, and I wanted to get out as quick as I could before anything happened. I got to Mont Saint Eloy, and. I reported, and they got me my pass for Selby, because that was the nearest. My village was 4 miles from Selby, but the nearest train was station was at Selby, so the pass was made out for there. And I got on the train, and Equals, I think it was. Somewhere near Monson Dry, anyway. And it seemed to go very slowly, did that train. But we did get to Calais eventually, and I got a boat, and we got to Dover. It's lovely to see those white cliffs of Dover again. And I got to London, and got to King's Cross. I was waiting for the train, and anyway I found a train was leaving for Selby, and I got in, and another chap got in with another soldier. I think there was only two or three or four was in the compartment, but it sort of got him in. We got talking, and he was home on sick leave, evidently he'd been wounded or something, and we talked a bit, you see, and he said to me, after a while, he said, do you ever get any rum, that old rum nowadays? I said, yes, we still get it up from time to time. He said, you know, I'd volunteer to go back just to get the rum. I said, you wouldn't. He said, I would. I said, well, you've never been where I've been, or you wouldn't volunteer. He said, oh, as I look. I said, that awful stuff. He says, ah. He says, oh, I loved it. I said, and you still get it? I said, yes. Now, the regiment sergeant major, before I was coming home, he said, would you like a drop of rum home with you? I said, well, my parents would like it. He said, give me a water bottle. And he put me a nice drop of rum in a big water bottle. So I said to this soldier, I took the cork, I said, just have a smell at that. He says, ooh, lovely. That's the real stuff. I said, yes. I said, would you like a little drink? He says, ooh, thank you. That was my good deed for the day. So he had a drink. And we talked, you know, we got jolly, and the train stopped at Peterborough. There was a break. And we had a shock there, because the guard came shouting down, all forces personnel out. Now, we'd been warned before we came away that we might be called back, because there was something impending, and we knew that you might be called back, and we were told the same night, if you get the call back, you come. Well, I thought, well, I haven't even got home, and I thought, shall I sit in the and not bother going to report? And I thought, no, I mustn't do that, I'll get in trouble. So I went out, I got out, there'd be maybe a dozen of us, one of those sailors among us, and the card said, the Prime Minister's on the train and he wants to have a word with you. Well, that was a lovely relief. So after a bit, this chap came waddling down and he had a talk to us, you know. Lloyd George it was, Prime Minister, and he shook hands with us all and said we were doing a good job. And when he got to me, he says, where have you come from then? I says, from France. He says, whereabouts in France? He says, well, I can't tell you, sir. Why don't you know? I says, yes, but I'm not allowed to tell you. Oh. Friends, how old are you? I said, I'm just 19. And how long have you been in France? I said, just over a year. Just over a year. And you're only 19. Well, you're doing a good job. He didn't offer me a nice home job, you know. But however, I've shook hands with the Prime Minister. That was something.
What did you think of Lloyd George at the time?
Oh, I thought he was all right. I didn't know much about him at that age. You don't know much about politics at all, do you? So, anyway, I got back in the train and went to sleep. I'd asked the guard, I said, if I'm, because we'd been in, I'd had no sleep for a night at all, much. I said, just wake me up at Selby, will you? Well, the train stopped. I thought, oh, we're at Selby, I'm all right. Looked out, it was York. We'd gone through Selby, and it was almost midnight, and it was winter time.
Why hadn't he woken you up?
He'd forgotten. And he said, oh, you asked me. I said, he said, I've forgotten. I said, well, so I asked a porter there. I said, what time is there a train back to Selby? Oh, he said, it'll be about 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. I said, not before then. He said, no. I said, is there any waiting stop? He says, well, in the waiting room. I said, is there firing? He said, no. It was snowing, and there was snow on the ground. He said, well, where do you want to be? I says, Caerwood. Well, I said, it's a 4-mile walk from Selby, but that's nothing. So So I studied a bit. I says, well, I'm not stopping here. I said, I'm going to walk. And he says, you walk at the cairn? He said, it was 10 miles in there. I said, yes. And I had full pack of my rifle and ammunition, all the lot, you see. But I set off and I walked it. I said, I've got to walk. I've a rendezvous tomorrow. I've an arrangement. I've arranged to meet my girlfriend at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to be there. So I walked, and I got home sometime early in the morning, you know, and mother came down. She said, we knew you were coming from leave soon. We didn't know when you didn't. I said, no, I couldn't let you know. Well, you want something to eat with you? So she cooked me a nice slice of ham, so some home-fed ham for the start. And I met my girl the next morning at 10 o'clock. She says, you've made it then. I said, yes, with a bit of luck.